Dr. Clifford, would you please address the committee?
So thank you again, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. And thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today on behalf of the United States Department of Agriculture. In recent weeks, a number of new detections of highly pathogenic avian influenza found at U.S. poultry farms has slowed considerably. In fact, it's been over 2 weeks since we found a case in Iowa, and probably approaching 3 weeks and approaching 4 weeks, if not therefore already over 4 weeks, I believe, since we found the last case in Minnesota. So these are bright spots in the largest animal health emergency in our country's history. While encouraging developments, the impact of this unprecedented disease outbreak is still being felt throughout our industries. Trading partners have restricted U.S. poultry exports, and the risk of the disease reemerging in the fall or spring is significant. Our hearts go out to the affected producers, their employees, and the communities they live and support. I assure you that this disease has the USDA's fullest attention, and we are committed to standing with our producers and industry to get them back on their feet. The Secretary of Agriculture is leading efforts to respond to this virus, assist producers, and maintain trade markets. As we look to the fall, we will be ready for the challenge. More than 400 USDA staff and over 2,000 USDA contracted personnel have been working around the clock in every affected state on this response. We've delivered over $180 million in indemnification payments to producers to control the spread of the disease and to help them recover. All told, USDA has committed over $500 million, an amount more than half of APHIS's yearly budget. In responding aggressively to this outbreak, we can and will request additional funds should we need to. We've carefully studied and assessed the epidemiology of the virus, as well as our response efforts in conjunction with our state and industry partners. We know that wild birds brought this disease to the western U.S. in the late 2014. As the birds and virus moved into the Midwest, we saw point source introductions as well as farm-to-farm spread of the virus. Although we can't point to a single specific practice that caused this, our epidemiological reports suggest that lapses in biosecurity were a contributing factor. We've talked at length with the state and industry partners about our findings and the need for all of us to think more comprehensively about on-farm biosecurity. We all agree we're in this fight together. We have a shared interest in eradicating this disease and getting the poultry industry back on its feet. Last week, we met with the industry and state officials to ensure that we have a high-level preparedness to deal with the reemergence and possible spread of the virus come fall. We've encouraged our partners to review the existing avian influenza response plan so that they understand what we will expect and what actions we will need them to take should the disease strike. We are also urging states and industry to develop site and country-level specific depopulation plans for landfilling or composting birds. Our experience in the Midwest showed us the biggest roadblock to efficient depopulation is the lack of ready sites to receive and process dead birds. For our part, we're taking proactive steps to be ready for the fall. We're identifying staffing needs and hiring more than 450 additional temporary employees, including 210 animal health technicians and 90 veterinary medical officers. We're also developing a potential vaccine strategy. Should we decide to use vaccines to address the outbreak, we'll have the systems in place to do so. As part of our planning, we're also working with our partners to increase surveillance of wild bird populations. We need to be able to identify the virus's presence as quickly as possible to stamp it out. Later this month, we'll be meeting directly with state veterinarians and industry to discuss the need for more biosecurity. The meeting in Des Moines will help ensure that our collective biosecurity is more stringent and that we're prepared as we again prepare for the fall. I want to thank all of our partners in the industry and the states for their cooperation in this process. Their efforts and willingness to work with us are appreciated and will help us as we plan for the fall. Mr. Chairman, this concludes my testimony.
We turn now to Dr. Swain.
Chairman Roberts, Ranking Member Stabenow, and members of the committee. I am the laboratory director of the Southeast Poultry Research Laboratory, which is part of the Agricultural Research Services U.S. National Poultry Research Center in Athens, Georgia. ARS is committed to eradicating the HPAI virus at the center of the current North American outbreak through providing cutting-edge research and diagnostics, molecular epidemiology, pathology, and vaccinology. In response to the first detections of HPAI in the United States, ARS refocused its HPAI research program to the most imminent research needs. Within weeks, a rapid molecular test was developed to detect the Asian H5 HPAI virus, which quickly differentiated it from the North American low-path AI viruses. This test was transferred to the National Vet Services Laboratory of APHIS and is the core test in the diagnostic effort to rapidly identify vaccinated flocks. We conducted studies to understand how the early HPAI viruses infected and caused disease in birds. In chickens and turkeys, high exposure doses were needed to produce infections, and bird-to-bird contact transmission was inefficient. But all infected chickens and turkeys became ill and died. By contrast, domestic ducks and mallards became infected with low doses of virus and had more efficient contact transmission, but they did not become ill or die. Subsequent experiments using later Midwest HPAI viruses required less virus to infect chickens, and contact transmission occurred more easily, this indicating the later HPAI viruses had changed and were more easily transmitted to and among chickens and turkeys. In extending the laboratory data to the field situation, ARS researchers teamed up with APHIS virologists and epidemiologists, as well as field and university poultry veterinarians, by providing them with genetic analysis of HPAI viruses in order to focus the epidemiologic investigations. Genetic analysis supported a point source introduction from infected waterfowl to poultry in the Pacific Flyway and the early cases in the Midwest area. However, the later Midwest viruses showed evidence of common source introduction for outbreaks supporting farm-to-farm spread. In the United States, there is no vaccine approved or currently in use in commercial poultry for high-path AI. While some nations have attempted to utilize vaccine to protect poultry against H5N1 HPAI virus, a primary focus on vaccination for control has not led to immediate eradication. 99% of the HPAI vaccine has been used in China, Egypt, Vietnam, and Indonesia, where H5N1 HPAI is endemic. In these countries, prolonged vaccination use has been associated with vaccine failure and emergence of vaccine resistance, necessitating continued surveillance for vaccine-resistant strains and periodic change of the vaccine seed strain to more closely match the circulating HPAI field viruses. In support of APHIS, ARS conducts HPAI vaccine seed strain development and testing as a routine research activity, but it does not manufacture vaccines nor decide when or if vaccines should be used in the field. The licensing and use of vaccine is determined by APHIS. Currently, ARS has developed a new vaccine seed strain for inactivated vaccines and is conducting protection studies in chickens and turkeys. If viable, the vaccine seed strain will be transferred to a commercial vaccine manufacturer. In addition, ARS is evaluating registered AI vaccines for protection in chickens and turkeys against current outbreak viruses. Vaccination can play a helpful role in disease eradication if properly implemented. But globally, vaccination has negatively impacted poultry exports, which is a crucial part of the U.S. poultry industry. Efforts to mitigate the effect of vaccination on exports include identifying infected poultry within vaccinated populations through reliable and cost-effective serological and virological testing. Such a strategy is often termed DIVA testing. Development and validation of DIVA vaccination strategies is a research priority. In conclusion, the current HPAI outbreak presents unique and unprecedented challenges to the U.S. poultry industry, and ARS and collaborators immediately shifted their research programs to high-priority areas. One, infectivity and transmission studies in poultry and wild birds. Two, rapid diagnostic test development for detecting Asian H5 HPAI virus. Three, molecular epidemiologic studies on virus spread. And four, development of efficacious vaccines and an effective vaccination strategy. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify and for congressional support as we continue to fight this virus.
Well, thank you both again for taking the time to join us today. We appreciate your sharing your expertise and your firsthand experiencing managing this outbreak. For both of you, Please describe as quickly as you can, but also be thorough, which I know you will, some of the protocols that are in place to ensure the safety of the food supply and public health. We'll start with you, Dr. Cleaver.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With regards to highly pathogenic avian influenza, this virus, because it kills birds and the way we eradicate this virus, none of these birds go to slaughter. And if they did go to slaughter, they would be condemned at slaughter because of the virus itself and the destruction this virus causes in the bird itself. So it would never, this virus would not be entering the food supply. Having said that, the virus itself does not cause any particular concern at this time to the Centers for Disease Control and Health and Human Services. We monitor that very, very closely with them. We provide the virus sequences to CDC on an ongoing basis. We do that as active surveillance continually, not just in this occurrence, but in other occurrences. We follow these viruses. As Dr. Swain indicated, we also monitor the wild bird surveillance. And we also have swine surveillance in this country that we also monitor so that we can be proactively protecting public health as well as animal health.
Dr. Swain, anything you would like to add, sir?
I think it was adequately covered.
Dr. Swain, outside of the current research being done on the two circulating strains of HPAI H5N2 and H5N8, what additional research do you think is needed in order for the industry and government to combat this virus?
Research on vaccines is an important part of control programs globally, and our lab, as well as other labs in the U.S., have done work to help other countries such as Egypt, Indonesia, Vietnam, in combating their own problems with high path AI and our neighbor to the south, Mexico. And so additional work on H7N3, which is a big threat in Mexico, is needed. And it's always a concern for us here in the United States that that virus could move north across the border.
Dr. Clifford, avian influenza has left many wondering about the vulnerabilities that may exist within our national animal health protection infrastructure. Foreign animal disease threats such as foot and mouth disease could have widespread impacts. So let's look forward. What additional steps could be taken to ensure we are ready to manage a disease like foot and mouth should it appear in the U.S.?
Well, there's actually several things on that front. Let me first by saying we need to have adequate personnel to be able to address these issues. Since the beginning of sequestration, APHIS has lost about $430 million and about 800 positions. Of that, within veterinary services alone, to date, we've lost $36 million and 225 positions. But at the beginning of this, we had lost initially $54 million and 250 positions. With the high path AI situation that we're faced with, we have limited field support. I have a total of about 1,800 people in my organization to respond and to prepare. With regards to foot and mouth disease, with all of these diseases, it's a shared effort, and it has to be a shared effort between the industry and the states and the federal government. With regards to things like foot and mouth disease, and I'd like to even address this, if I could, and take a moment to expand it to high path AI and other diseases. We in the world, worldwide and internationally, have to stop eradicating diseases through the total destruction of animals and depopulation of animals. We need to find new ways to save animals and that protein for their families, for the owners, for the companies, for trade, for a lot of reasons, economics, and it's also a waste of protein. The only way we can do that is to put new tools in our toolbox and to effectively develop new strains of vaccine or other types of treatment to be able to address these issues. In the case of foot and mouth disease, we need an appropriate level of vaccine bank. Our previous vaccine bank was based upon an eradication, go in and kill approach. It wasn't based upon a vaccine to live or a vaccine to kill approach. And so with that, we, besides the resource needs, we would need adequate levels of vaccine. The National Veterinary Stockpile, which when it was started quite a few years ago, the idea was for it to have $20 million to help support these efforts. It's funded, I believe, to date at $4 million for the National Veterinary Stockpile. Same way with HiPath AI. We've got to find out better ways and better tools to control this disease. We've got to have facilities, and I don't have a problem with integrated facilities or outdoor birds. This virus doesn't care which way it is. But if we're building facilities, we have to build facilities that will protect one house from another house. So if you get the disease in one house, we can destroy 100,000 birds, not 3 million.
Thank you, Dr. Clifford. Dr. Swain, would you like to add anything? With apologies to my colleagues for going over time.
I think the issue for us is the same as with APHIS, is that our funding level has required us to reduce staffing over the last 12 years from 35 staff members who worked full-time on avian influenza down to 20. And so with immediate research response in an outbreak like that, we have a limited number of staff and also aging facilities. We appreciate the Senate obligating in FY 2014 $45 million, which is be used to upgrade some of our existing facilities. And there's a request in the budget for 2016 for the final piece of that budget, $113 million, to final upgrade of all facilities. And that's needed for us to be able to respond quickly and carry on the experiments we need to do to support the poultry industry. And our handicap in the size of our facilities and the aging facilities has restricted the type of studies we can do. So, for example, we can't do studies in 12-week-old turkeys or older, which are a critical part of the outbreaks in both Minnesota and Iowa.
Thank you, gentlemen. Senator Stabenow.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And just along the sides of what you just indicated, the ongoing concern that I have in a number of fronts is that we're penny wise and pound foolish as we look at various things where we need to be getting ahead of it in terms of prevention, and we wait until we're in this crisis and don't have the tools, Dr. Clifford, as you were talking about, to make sure we are saving as many birds as possible or getting ahead of this. And that's an ongoing concern that I have in general about the way we are budgeting and lack of really strategically thinking things through in terms of what is a smart way to provide funding. Specifically on the avian influenza, when we look at the fact that this piled up very quickly in the spring in the Mississippi Flyway, and when we're talking about how quickly you had to move, and again, congratulations to everyone working as a team to respond to this crisis. When you look going forward, what are the lessons you learned from the spring in terms of being effective, timely mitigation? And when you look going forward from here, what do you think in terms of a government response has positioned you for a potentially difficult fall? So, you know, what have you learned to this point? What does it mean? What does it mean in terms of responding going on into the fall?
So I'll hit a couple of those areas. I think initially our response, while we were on site rapidly, it's key to put birds down quickly. And in some cases, there was delays in doing that for a multitude of reasons. We've got to not allow that to occur, because the longer birds live, the more virus production, and therefore the more likelihood of more environmental contamination, more spread. So that's one lesson learned. Now, we rapidly caught up to that after a while in Minnesota, and we're able to get the turkeys down pretty quickly after we caught up, got the kind of crews available. But there's other issues here that need to be through the planning process. I mentioned it in my testimony about disposal. We had to go for quite some time. In fact, we had to initiate and call in Secretary Vilsack and the governor of Iowa to address issues of landfill use in the state of Iowa, while the state itself had already pre-planned and had some of these things lined up. But when it comes to the actual outbreak, people get concerned. There's perceptions about these types of things, and they're concerned about their own livelihood and the way it's going to be viewed by others. It's the same way as a brand name. And so it was hard to break down some of those barriers initially. In addition, we've got to find a better way to get these birds euthanized properly, killed properly, humanely. But in these larger facilities, we got to do it in a more timely way. And we're having some more of the discussions around that particular topic as well. We're going to be meeting a group of veterinarians who will be meeting with the AVMA this coming weekend in Boston to discuss some of those strategies and to get the support of the American Veterinary Medical Association for some of that.
Thank you. Dr. Swain, did you want to respond to that as well?
And just briefly, I think for us in our lab, we will be concentrating on a couple of things as research between now and the fall. One is assisting APHIS in some of the epidemiologic studies to try to identify risk factors that may be associated with movement of these viruses onto farms. And hopefully through that process, that will help the companies and the farmers to reestablish their biosecurity strategies to reduce any potential entry of that virus back into the farms. Also, we'll be spending the next several months concentrating most of our laboratory research efforts on vaccines, but also vaccination protocols and how realistic they could be for use in the fall. And then we'll be working closely with colleagues on the wildlife health side in identifying the viruses that might be in wild waterfowl and determining if they're more adapted to waterfowl or if they're similar to the Midwest poultry-adapted viruses. And that will determine the strategy for prevention in the fall.
Thank you. And then finally, if I'm just very quickly, Dr. Clifford, because this is a team effort between the public and the private sector, just wondering, when you think about potential cases or suggestions or concerns, how does that go from farm to the offices of APHIS?
Well, you know, it's about communication and working together. So, I think, you know, in this particular outbreak situation, we had some issues initially in the beginning of this, and we've continued to improve communication. And so right now, it's really about working very closely with the industry and the states. We've held a meeting with the industry and states about a week ago to bring together. We brought together about 90 people. I had an international meeting held in Baltimore, or we did, with to talk about the actions the U.S. were taking, talking about what other actions the other countries were taking, and how to collaborate and address some of these issues, such as the use of vaccines. So we began some of those discussions there with the industry, states, and other countries. So that we are hearing the concerns from the industry, and we'll be incorporating those into our action plans for the fall.